Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 76. Playoffs underway. Just got back from Brooklyn. And the Nets, as I kind of predicted, rolled over in those two games. Kyrie Irving ends up having a devastatingly poor series. And I thought escaped most of the criticism in the end there, with Kevin Durant obviously pummeled in the national media for his sub 40% shooting series. Brutal games 1 through 3 for him. And the Celtics come out of it, I think, underrated still. This series ended up getting looked at more as a Brooklyn collapse than a Boston triumph. Even as the only sweep of the first round, the most dominant defense I think we've seen in the playoffs so far. And I thought a brilliant performance from Jason Tatum in tandem with Jaylen Brown. Those two were well connected. Tatum passed out of double teams 3 games, as I'll mention here in our show today. He hit 0 shots in the first quarter and went on to win those games. That would be unimaginable a year ago. Meanwhile, parallels from a year ago, Celtics lose that series to the Nets 4-1, end up firing their coach. Is that the right word? Moving their coach upstairs. Ainge, Danny Ainge's GM, steps down, ends up with the Jazz, who now has his hands full too, doesn't he? There. Looked like a better situation a year ago. Now, maybe one of the most tenuous circumstances hand-in-hand with the Nets, and that's who we're going to talk about today, Brooklyn. Their future, where they go from here, looks like a bit of a catastrophe between Irving hitting free agency after a year where he didn't show up. I mean, I don't emphasize that enough in the episode today. He didn't show up to start this season. I don't think a star has ever done that. Mandate or not, you know, whether you're with him on his stance or not, fact is he didn't show up to his team this year until 35 games in. They didn't get all that much better from there, and in many ways they got worse. So I think they have a real decision this offseason on whether they want to latch themselves on to 30-year-old Kyrie Irving for $250 million. It's going to be a battle. I'm talking about it today with Matt Brooks right off the top. Matt Brooks covers the Nets for Nets Daily, basketball news, and his own podcast, which he'll tell you about. Coming up here on Dome Theory, we are back. We're going to Milwaukee for games 3 and 4 this next series, which is going to be a battle. I just posted a preview of this series on clnsmedia.com, and I'm scared. I am. I have all the respect in the world for Giannis. When the Celtics went down a year ago, I really started to hone in on rooting for the Bucks. I thought they were just a fascinating team to watch. A ton of fun. The story's incredible. If you haven't read Giannis by Miren Fader, we talked to her about that book last year around this time as they were charging toward a championship. And now they're looking to defend it. And Giannis just had this absolutely hilarious quote after they clinched Game 5 of the Bulls in the middle of this week about how he doesn't watch basketball. Seemed to vaguely allude to the fact that he knew he was playing the Celtics, but didn't really know what they were all about. Too much stress watching basketball. He doesn't do it. Hilarious. And a bit of a shade, I felt like. A bit of shade thrown at the Celtics there. So this is going to be a back and forth. I think fans, after the jubilation of that Nets series, need to get prepared to fasten their seatbelts a little bit and be stressed out here, because this series isn't ending in 4 or 5 like that Nets one could have. This isn't a team that's going to roll over. They're a better defense, I think, looking into it than they showed during the year. And they actually just held the Bulls to 93 points per 100. So, double big, triple big, really, with Bobby Portis in there. They're a huge team, and they're going to match up well with the Celtics. We'll get to that. For now, let's stomp on the Nets' graves. And this weekend, with round 2 getting started, if you're going to bet it, betonline.ag, it's the place to do it. Most odds, props, futures, anything you need, sports, betting, and info. BetOnline.ag has it. Incredible website. I know this will be expired by game 6 between the Grizzlies and Timberwolves, but game 1, open Sunday, 4.5-point favorites the Celtics are. Money just pouring in on Boston at this point. That's a little high. But again, no Chris Middleton in this series. So some people might look at that and give Boston a definitive edge the way they're playing defense. 4.5's a lot, though. I would take the Bucks in game 1 with those points. Heat and 76ers game 1. Heat 3.5-point favorites. Suns 6-point favorites on the Mavericks in their game one. You want to bet on the series? Well, go ahead. BetOnline.ag is going to allow you to do that. Series props. You can bet on the outcome, the series spread. Celtics win by 1.5 games. You can get plus 110 odds on that if you think they're going to win in six. Conference futures also live. Warriors 145 to win the West. Suns, they were the best team out there all year, up to 160. Grizzlies, Mavericks, Wolves, all long shots. You can get 12,500 on the Wolves. Wouldn't do that, but if you want a long shot, they're there. Celtics favorites in the East, plus 135. Heat plus 225. Bucks 350. If you feeling good about the Bucks in spite of that Middleton injury. They did sustain a Giannis injury last year, remember, and made the finals. Their odds are great. Philly, plus 550, the long shot. Wouldn't bet them, but plus odds all across the boards there, even as we get down to the final four in each conference. NBA draft futures live as well. NBA specials. Next team for Kyrie Irving, if it's not the Nets. Nets, will they win a first-round playoff series next season? Will Nash be fired? Yes, it's actually plus 300. We'll talk about that on today's show. Will Ben Simmons play game one next year? Yes, minus 400. If you aren't high on Ben Simmons returning, plus 250 odds on no for game one next year. It's pretty good. NBA series, Wolves plus 500 against the Grizzlies. If they can win game six and seven, you can grab that tonight. Bucks. Plus 170 against the Celtics. Celtics minus 195. Heat minus 180. 76ers plus 160. Suns minus 265 against the Mavs. You can get the Mavs for plus 225, of course. All of the sports developments, including updated odds, are available on betonline.ag. And don't forget, baseball is back too. MLB season is finally here. So BetOnline is your definitive, continued source for your sports wagering needs, including live betting and, of course, the favorite Vegas casino and poker games of everyone. It's super easy to get started. Head over to the website. Again, I love that website. Or use your mobile device to join and use the promo code CLNS50, CLNS50. Promo code CLNS50, that's CLNS50, to get 50% back on your first deposit. There are 150 free to bet. Bet online where the game starts. Here is Dome Theory 76 with Matt Brooks. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory on CLNS Media. We are back with a fresh new episode after the Celtics swept, as you see below, the Brooklyn Nets in the first round. The only sweep in the first round of the NBA playoffs. I think a lot of people, myself included, shocked, but not surprised if you follow the Nets this year and all the dysfunction and really inconsistency, injuries, mishaps, whatever word you want to use. I'm going to ask Matt Brooks for the word he would use to describe this season. He covered the whole thing for Nets Daily as well as Basketball News. Good to have you here, Matt.
Hey, thank you for having me. Yeah, what a weird year. It just was
Is endless. That the word, weird?
If I'm trying to keep it as PG as possible, yeah, we'll call it weird. Man, I mean, it was just, you know, every step of the way there was something. So I guess from a story's perspective, it was a really interesting year. From the perspective of, like, you know, somebody who's trying to, like, build storylines and cover a team and see where they're going, it was just like, you know, you never got there. They're just a mess the whole year.
Yeah, and that's the story that they are telling now as the series concludes. Kind of a self-preserving storyline, I'd say, of this year.
Yeah.
Injuries, absences, lack of cohesion and gelling in Kyrie's case, as he put it. I don't think that's the whole truth. I mean, that's what happened. I don't think it exactly explains how they got there. And I think because of that lack of accountability there, it definitely cast a cloud over where this whole thing's going. They're going to have talent going into the future. They had talent this year, but something is off beyond the fact that they were hurt and there was a crazy trade midseason. I mean, that alone still has to be addressed, I think, in many ways, the fact that that happened and the fact that Ben Simmons never played. But we'll get into all of that. I guess my first question for you as we pick up the pieces of the series is, where is Kyrie in this whole thing now? I mean, obviously he misses the first 35 games with the vaccination mandate, becomes road only after that. The team doesn't play all that well after his return. And frankly, after a big 39-point game won in this series, he kind of disappeared. And so Boston people know this story well, kind of his erratic nature, the enormous amount of skill, but the foot in his mouth at all times too, leaving the podium, essentially doing a Le GM, saying that we're going to lead this with Sean Marks and the ownership group. And in my mind, I feel like the lesson from this year is less power for the players here. Maybe that's not realistic, but that was sort of how I came away looking at this season.
Well, that's the general trend, right? Is that there is this, you know, I mean, the CBA is up in 2 years. So I think that this team is emblematic of why that's changing. You know, Simmons not playing, and granted, I think there's a lot that they need to work out there. And I don't think either side handled that situation very well. I think Simmons's camp may have pushed a little too hard in one direction, and then the Nets just weren't fully prepared, I think, to handle that whole situation at all. Kyrie is difficult. I understand a little bit from Celtics fans' side, I think, or just people that cover the Celtics now, a little bit of what it's like. Because to me, it felt like watching him.
You've experienced it now.
Yeah. So for me personally, it felt like he had this big game one. They didn't win, and I don't know if it took him out of the series or what, but it just was like you just didn't feel that impact from him. Like, he wasn't going to the rim as much. You know, game four, like, he just – we can be honest. Like, he just wasn't trying. It looked like he just didn't want to go back to Boston. So that was kind of – I think in that way you got that experience as a Nets fan. And this guy's been, like, you know, beloved within the Nets fan base. A lot of it is because that – he grew up a fan of this team. He's been, you know, just this big, I guess, culture piece for Nets fans. But I think right now you're starting to see people are a little bit frustrated with him for the obvious reasons that he missed 2/3 of the season. But on top of that, it's like, yo, if you're going to miss 2/3 of the season, you're going to need to have more than one good game in the playoffs. Like, that's kind of, I think, the general consensus right now.
Yeah, for sure. And he's an impending free agent. There's a $200 million deal that I'm sure he'll expect given his talents and everything else. And that's going to be an interesting negotiation just because of how this whole thing went. Now, you can look at it two ways, and I'm sure the Nets are going to look at it the first way and say there's no vax mandate this year, supposedly. You know, who knows where that would go if there's another ramp up here. But you would think there's no vax mandate this year. You would think he'll be fully available. He's only 30 next season, which, you know, he's getting older, but not too old yet. And what else are you going to do? I guess the argument against it is just his erratic nature. 34 games per season now through 3 years with the Nets. Slightly injury prone. I mean, that's something that I think has creeped into his career at this point. Beyond the fact that I just don't know how reliable he is. Now, there's a Kevin Durant factor in here. I think Durant has enormous amounts of trust in him. They're kind of a package deal, as it showed from the beginning there. But that's the decision that the Nets kind of have to make here is, all right, Durant's under contract. He's here to stay. Do we as an organization make a choice on Kyrie and say, maybe this isn't the way we want to go? I'm thinking, like, I was going back and forth all day yesterday because it's hard to say you're going to move on from Kyrie and the talent and everything that he brings on the court. But there's an off the court component that I feel like is just so hard to ignore and has completely overshadowed his skill now through Cleveland, Boston, and a little bit in Brooklyn.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I don't think they have any choice but to bring him back. Just because of the KD factor, you know, those two are a package deal. They are still very close. So because of that, I think you have to bring him back. Now, how they're going to, you know, write out that contract, is there going to be a game stipulation? That's, like, for me, what's really fascinating. And I think that's where those negotiations get fascinating. Let's say they require him, you know, or they're writing something into that contract that is, I guess, a backing in case they run into another situation where he misses games for whatever reason. I think that is the part that I'm watching. How does he respond to that? Does he sign a contract like that? does that become a stressful negotiation?
You know, it's the other factor in there. He doesn't have a traditional agent. I believe his aunt's his agent now.
Yep. This is the second. Harden didn't have an agent when they were dealing with him in the regular season too. So they've just, it's been two guys that have dealt with this. And now they have Rich Paul. So, they're getting all types of sides of agency. So I think that for me is like what's the most interesting. But in terms of him coming back, I would be like utterly shocked. I'm probably 98% think he's going to be back. The big thing is just going to be how do those negotiations go with his contract.
Yeah, you'd have to think of another destination for him. And if he's, of course, talked retirement. If he wasn't in Brooklyn, I don't know how many people believe that would be the way he would go if he did end up getting traded early in the year. He'd have to find a destination. He'd have to play ball a little bit because he, of course, can enter free agency here, and that'd have to be a sign-and-trade scenario. So I think that makes it all the more unlikely that he's not going to end up in Brooklyn. But there would be some interesting scenarios. I mean, I guess the question is how much interest there'd be in the league around him. Like, would a Dallas do a Dinwiddie-type deal? Maybe another piece in there. I mean, that's kind of where I get stuck personally. Like, there's just really not a lot of destinations out there that make sense. Would Sacramento do De'Aaron Fox? I don't know. Would Kyrie go to Sacramento? This is all the kind of stuff that makes it unlikely that he's not going to be back there. Beyond the fact that, like you said, this has just sort of been the Nets' plan. But, you know, Joe Tsai's paying massive amount of money at this point on this team. Luxury tax year in and year out. That contract really is ginormous that they're looking at here. So you make a good point there. It's going to have to be this kind of butting of heads in the offseason over what the stipulations are in the contract. Is it going to be a full max? I've never heard of games played in a contract, like maybe an injury type thing. You know, like I think Robert Williams has like a tiny incentive extension, you know, if he can get to 70 games or so there. But I've never heard of on paper saying you have to play 65 games or this amount of money's going to come off your contract. And that's sort of what they're talking in the CBA now, as Zach Lowe put it the other day, right?
Yeah. I wonder if this is going to be the, kind of the ground floor for that. You know, if this contract is going to be, you know, what other contracts start getting based off of. So it'd be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of other stuff going on here, and it was about this season, but really you got to go back 3 years to the beginning of this whole thing to map out all the wild stuff that happened in Brooklyn that got us to this point. Obviously they had a awesome rebuild after the Celtics Pierce Garnett trade culminated in D'Angelo Russell and that group making the playoffs. Kenny Atkinson made a name for himself as the head coach there, and that's where it started stumbling. Durant, Irving come back the next year. There's a controversy over DeAndre Jordan not playing over Jared Allen, and that supposedly costs Atkinson his job. Jacques Vaughn had a great run. I was just talking to my Nets fan friend about this the other day. Like, he really was awesome to close that first season there with Kyrie off the court in the bubble. But he ends up taking a backseat to Steve Nash, who comes in. Allen and the young guys get traded. Harden comes in, foot on the line, injuries, and that takes us to this year. But it really was that sort of grasping for power at the beginning that I look back on and say, Brooklyn kind of misstepped there by probably giving Irving and Durant a little too much of a voice there. On that situation, I think, is where the players get the blame. The Steve Nash thing, to me, that's still a tricky one. I don't know where you fall on that in terms of whether it was the right move, who's to blame for it if it was the wrong move, because obviously him and Sean Marks have a relationship too that I think went into that. And now it seems like he's going to stay head coach, which is odd to me and probably not a good sign for Nets fans. I think that's probably where most Nets fans are putting their disdain after this year is on him.
Yeah, I mean, it's him. I've been surprised. A lot of Nets fans have been really upset with the Stars, which I was not expecting to see. You know, I think fans before this year held the Stars in such a like high regard. Because again, like, you know, a lot of these fans have not had Stars, especially if they're from the Brooklyn era. They just haven't dealt with this. So I thought that was interesting. On two things. On the player empowerment piece, I guess. I think it's really difficult in a way, because I do wonder how easy it is to kind of walk that back. You know, they gave KD and Kyrie so much power initially. it's kind of hard to walk that back now, especially after that comment that Kyrie had about, you know, oh, we're all going to manage together, you know, manage alongside Sean Marks and Joe Tsai. I think that's going to be an interesting struggle in a way, because I do think it's hard to walk back how much power you've given guys moving forward, I guess. In terms of Steve Nash, I mean, I think I'm not sold he's going to be there next year. The thing I'm probably watching is if he walks away from that job versus him getting let go. Because I just, I think that
he might have enjoyed it the least of anyone.
I mean, look at the last 2 years for him. You know, like, it's just been year one.
He's got the Obama style graying going on.
Yeah, it's like you can see it. You know, I think it was weird watching him do his pressers in the very, you know, after game four. There was like almost a sense of relief on his face, I think, just to like get out of this season. So I'm kind of wondering, like, hey, is this going to be, yes, the Nets are not going to have him as head coach this year, but not in the way people expect. Is he going to walk away from this job? Because he just had to deal with a lot through really every single second of the last two seasons.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm kind of torn on it. I'm not a fan of him as a coach.
No,
like, I don't think he was well equipped to succeed in that role for a variety of reasons. And I think you look specifically at the on the court stuff. It wasn't great. I look especially to the period where I think they got a huge pass losing 17 to 20 games with Harden out. Durant was out at the time. Irving was kind of in between his return there. And that was sort of the time where you needed coaching. You needed to ramp some young guys up, develop them, work them into bigger roles, and put yourself in a place where you were going to have the depth to make a run here. And I thought that was kind of the fatal flaw of this team in the end, was that they didn't have the depth. They didn't have the contributing pieces late in the year. They sort of did with Bruce Brown. That's about as close as they got. And Bruce Brown was on the bench in January. So, like, so much of that winter stretch where people probably weren't paying all that much attention to the Nets, I looked at and said, this isn't good right now. Like, no one's stepping up. And they have talented young guys. Think of who didn't play in the series, Matt. Cam Thomas, De'Ron Sharp, who showed signs. David Duke had some good runs throughout the year. I know he's a two-way guy and he doesn't qualify, but they cut James Johnson to get Kessel Edwards in there, and he doesn't really factor into the series at all either. Not to mention all these veterans that they've signed over the year, like Blake Griffin, who got pulled from no role at all into the year, and Aldridge, who's just sort of there taking jump shots and warm-ups at the end, not doing much of anything. So they had all this talent that just came to the team over the years, and none of it proved to be any use. And that's where you look at coaching. I know a lot of these guys are over the hill and stuff, but for Nash, it was just about the two stars, the three stars when Harden was there, you know, managing them, their egos, interpersonal stuff on the team. And he really didn't even do a good job at that, looking back on it. The fact that Harden bombed out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, you know, people made the joke about him being like the vibe commissioner on the team. And the vibes were really bad this year. Like, the vibes were not good at one single point this year. Maybe, I guess, at the very beginning of the season when they were the one seed.
Opening night.
Not even. They lost to Milwaukee.
That's right. They got killed.
They got killed in night one. They played this double big lineup and got killed because, you know, turns out just because playing bigger doesn't mean you're going to get rebounds if you're playing LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin together. No, I felt like this series against Boston was really emblematic of the Steve Nash experience in terms of, A, he just didn't play all the cards that he had. You know, they played Kessler Edwards for like 4 minutes in game one, and he looked like a fish out of water. But I felt like that was the guy that, like, hey, maybe give him additional run. The problem is, I think, for them is that all these games are so close. I think it was a little bit hard for him to just be like, all right, let's just throw LaMarcus Aldridge out there, Blake Griffin out there, especially because, again, you're in the game the whole time. But I do feel like this was emblematic of Nash. Just, he's very stuck in his ways, I think. And we didn't get to see certain guys. We didn't get to see Blake till the very end when he's had literally no condition. He's like huffing and puffing, and he's
got the ice pack on his arm after like 8 minutes. He looks
he's
like
got
he was
one arm
to fall apart.
He's taking charges and trying to grab rebounds with one arm, and it was like more effective than anything Andre Drummond did the entire series. So, yeah, I felt like it was a good representation of where Nash falls short. And I'm with you. I'll tell you what, I don't know where he ranks in the hierarchy of coaches in this league, but it's not high. Like, it's just, it's not. And again, this I think is the downside of having your players control as much as they control within Brooklyn, where, yeah, you have this team and you have all this talent and three stars at one point, at the very least two now. And instead of bringing in a guy, I know Ty Lue is linked to them. People are starting to do the revisionist history thing with Ime, but it's like, they weren't going to do that, but let's just throw him in there for an example.
I don't know if he works with that group, at least yeah. based on how he's managed Boston.
Well, I mean, I thought he did a good job. I mean, I thought him on Steve Nash's coaching staff last year did a good job against Milwaukee. They ran a pretty interesting scheme that was kind of similar to what the Celtics did against the Bucks, where they're just playing in the gaps the whole time. That worked against Milwaukee last year. So I think he had some sway on what they did a little bit last year. But let's just throw those guys out there. Like, those are two guys that the Nets could have gone with. And instead they went with a head coach that has like no coaching experience whatsoever, assistant coaching, anything like that. And that's a decision that came from the players. So, I mean, again, that's something that they now have to deal with.
You go back to the damning quote from Kyrie, and again, like, he says these things that stick with him and he has to live with them, and people don't forget. Like, it just doesn't flow into the wind. I wish I had it in front of me, but it was something to the effect of, we don't need a coach. This is sort of a collaborative thing we're doing yep. here with Steve. It just, like, he doesn't, nothing subtle, like, whatever he's thinking, whatever his mindset is, it's going to go out there. And that's sort of how this Nash era progressed. I don't know if it's over, but he certainly didn't seem to enjoy being the PR messenger on the whole Ben Simmons situation. And that was sort of the cherry on top of all the different things he had to go through there. And I know Kevin kind of described it, like I said at the beginning of the show, is, oh, we went through a lot in terms of guys being missing and stuff, and that was hard to work with. I think Nash went through a lot of BS off the court that, like, he just didn't know how to handle, like, the whole Harden Durant relationship. Kyrie, how do you handle that at the beginning of the year? Like, I doubt he could even say anything to Kyrie about his whole situation in terms of his status being able to play. I don't think anyone could. So how do you handle that as a coach? I don't know if any coach would be equipped to handle that. So in some way, you do give Nash a little bit of a pass, because the circumstances he went through were just beyond anybody's control there. But he didn't help, and that was the tough part. Like, you need a guy who would at least help on the court, making things go better there. And they were so, passive about the regular season in terms of availability and just winning games, that streak, the 17-20 that I mentioned, just sunk them to a place where you're in the play-in, you're the 7 seed, and that matters. Like, no 7 seed has won a conference for a reason. Like, it's hard. The path's hard. Your team's probably not in a good place if you're the 7 seed, and at some point your record is what your record is. And yep. I sort of compared it to the Lakers last year. Everyone went into that series saying, oh, they got the talent, they'll win the series. They got smoked because they weren't that good of a team, and they went up against a really good team that made the finals in the Suns. Felt like a similar situation here with the Celtics. And I want to get your Celtics thoughts as well before we get back to some Nets talk. And this seems to be going a little under the radar. It, of course, is on our podcast so far that we're doing here, is that the Celtics were really damn good in this series. I mean, they had that week off to prepare, and you saw it right away in game one. Two guys are on Durant in the lane. He's kind of getting bumped around like a pinball in there, and he's completely out of sorts by game three, saying that he's overthinking. Couldn't get to his spots because two guys are already there when he's getting to those mid-range spots, and everybody else was taken out of the picture as well, whether it was Seth Curry, you talked about Drummond, a lot of different guys were just completely neutralized on that Brooklyn side. And Boston's ability to take out the stars as well as the role players was really impressive.
Yeah, I thought their ability to prey on the Nets' inability to pass was just outstanding. The way the Celtics were able to double Durant and double him in ways where he just wasn't seeing windows. I did a video on game one, and like he missed Seth Curry in the corner two or three times wide open. And it's just like the Celtics had faith in their scheme that they could double him and move from there, but also just have faith that these guys are not going to make the right play necessarily, which is crazy because it's Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving who have been doing this for a long time.
They became turnover machines.
Man, I mean, and it was just like they every little, I thought Jaylen Brown was outstanding. Like just, and you know, he had his off ball lapses, which happened, but I thought he did a really great job in terms of preying on KD's moves, digging down on his,
I think 10 steals for Brown in four games.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really good Jaylen Brown series. He played really well on offense as well. You know, he was one of their, you know, big guys in terms of hunting down the Nets' lack of size defensively. I feel like he was always getting into, you know, Patty Mills or Seth Curry, especially on fast breaks. So it's like they were so well-oiled and prepared for this series in a way that the Nets were just not. The Nets were just like, we're just going to give the ball to KD and Kyrie, and we're going to hope for the best here, and let's see what we can do. And the Celtics were just ready at every step of the way. Obviously an amazing Tatum series as well. But yeah, I mean, you know, I have an Al Horford. I don't even know how I haven't even buried the lead with Al Horford just being.
Especially in the Boston games, he was electric. Game one, 21 and 15.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, they're awesome. Like this Celtics team is great. You know, I mean, I really truly enjoy watching them, and they're a team that I'm, you know, I don't really get emotionally invested in any teams like that, but I certainly have teams that I'm like, you know, gravitate towards. And I think that this Celtics team this year, it's the first one I could remember in a long time where I'm like, man, this is just an awesome team. Like they play well together, and there's just a good energy about them.
Yeah. And you got to give them credit too, because it wasn't like there were four blowouts here. I mean, they had to overcome that blown lead that they had in game one, going down late, and then just pulling off that ridiculous 4-point swing in the final minute of the game with one of the most iconic sequences, I think, in Celtics history there, depending on how the rest of these playoffs go, running full court and with the four passes to Tatum at the last second there. I mean, that was legendary stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's what it took to win game one. It took a 17-point comeback to win game two. I didn't think they were going to win that game the way that first half went. So you just look at some of the stuff they went through here. Game three and four were weird. Like the Nets were there the whole game, but they really weren't. But
they quit.
Four.
I'm going to let you know right now, that team had quit. They had quit after game two internally. Yeah. They had
wasn't
quit.
Game four something. That game was in their hands. Durant misses a free throw late. Claxton misses 10 free throws, which is just astonishing. I think that's the second time that's ever happened in playoff history. And then the whole runout sequence after the missed free throw that blew the game, it was like, whoa. I know Durant almost got the steal there, but like all those little things, this is why the Nets had no chance in this series, even if they were able to pull off a game or two here. They played no defense at all. That was the stars and the role guys. I thought Claxton and Brown did some decent stuff, but overall, system-wise, there was no defense.
Yep.
It was a track meet in transition for Boston off the turnovers and everything else. And like even the offensive rebounds that Brooklyn got, they really weren't able to capitalize off them. You know, they were going to the free throw line and other stuff that we just talked about there. So like all the little things, the connectivity factors, role guys stepping up, never really happened. Dragic had a few good moments. Brown had a few good moments. Claxton, I thought, played with a ton of energy, but nothing connected. Nothing came together into any real runs that could sustain themselves. And when you're a team that can't pile up stops, you end up getting swept here because they had good stretches that they just couldn't sustain because Boston just went back the other way and scored. It was so easy for the Celtics to run offense on this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the crazy thing is they didn't have Rob Williams, who I thought was going to be, you know, getting him back, I was like, man, they add a role guy.
And when he did come back, he didn't do that much.
No.
They just survived without him.
Yeah, and, like, that was another – they didn't even have that exploit out there in terms of, like – because I figured, like, oh, you have downhill rim pressure. You know, A, the Nets have not been great at defending slips to the rim. That's just not been something they've been able to do this year, and a lot of that is just predicated on any of their weak side rotations have just been a mess this year. And they were, by the way, in this playoff series, even without a rolling threat, it was just guys would get downhill and it would just completely, you know, collapse the defense in a way that Boston just didn't have that problem. So I thought Tatum especially picked his spots so well in terms of when going to the rim, when to attack guys on switches and stuff like that. that final game, he had, you know, he was like pulling up over Kyrie like he was a chair, basically. You know, it just,
he had a ridiculous shot on Durant in his face in game two during that comeback as well. And, you know, 3 out of 4 games, he didn't hit a bucket in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And if that happened a year ago, they lose all of those games. But he's just become such a better passer.
Yes. Yes. His passing was excellent. Just excellent. Like in a way that was so much substantially more noticeable than Kyrie or KD. It was like he really took that role on. So, yeah, I mean, I just, they were just ready. They were really, really prepared. And I think you look ahead to Milwaukee. It's like, I feel pretty good about the Celtics going forward because of how they approach this series.
Real quick, I don't want to get too much into it. We'll do a preview series on the show, but how do you see that series going?
You want me to make a prediction?
Just how you feel. You don't have to make a games, right? And, you know, but how do you feel about that one going in, just glancing at it?
I feel pretty good if I'm a Boston fan. I know Giannis is terrifying, and
he is scary.
He is terrifying, and they have really repurposed.
Even without Middleton, I'm like,
he's good. That guy's really good.
He's the best player in the league, and this series cemented that too. I feel like Durant. A lot of people felt like it was Durant coming into the year. No, it's not.
Not KD. I mean, look, Giannis wouldn't have had 3 games like that. I'm gonna stand by, and I might actually eat my words in this series, but I just refuse to believe that Giannis has 3 games like that. That said, I do think the Celtics have the right amount of, you know, big bodies in the paint. I think Rob Williams will be really crucial in this series.
It's Horford on Giannis, and it's Rob on Brooke. That's like everything right there in the series.
Yep, and it's gonna be a lot of corner kicks to Brooke, and it's gonna be a question of, will he make those? Will he not? Will he swing? But I mean, Giannis is—they've done a good job. They've repurposed that that roster with a lot more shooting, so that'll be big. I just watch the Celtics team, and they're so connected right now. And I just, Ime's excellent. I mean, he's just excellent. So I look at this.
Middleton being out huge.
Yeah,
huge factor.
Yeah, which stinks. I mean, you know, I guess that's the basketball gods, you know, paying it forward in a way. Where, you know, Milwaukee, and although even Giannis sprained his knee last year.
Wasn't that stunning that they tanked out of the Nets series? I can't believe they did that still.
They would have beat them in 5. I had them winning in 5. I hated that.
They had to be spooked about last year, right? How that series went.
I don't understand it. Because I really, that matchup was horrible. I actually saw Milwaukee as a way worse matchup for the Nets than the Celtics, which ultimately proved it didn't matter either way. But I just felt like, look, the Nets have no one to throw at Giannis. Nobody. And this whole year, the Bucks, really dating back to last year's series, the Bucks were able to dominate in terms of second chance points, turnovers. Like,
but it was hard. They remember how hard. I mean, what did they lose game 2 by last year? It was like 50.
But such a different Nets team, though. That this team is just, they had no resolve. You saw it at the end of every single game against Boston. Like, it's just such a different team this year. So. But I see the Celtics. All right, I'll throw out a prediction. I think the Celtics win in 6. I'd maybe go 5. I feel pretty good about this series for them. I think Middleton's really going to hurt not being there.
Yeah, that's huge. Home court, like I said, bombing out of that Nets series cost them home court in this series as well. So that's a factor too, especially 2 tough home courts between those 2 teams. I definitely see it going on the longer side. I just respect Giannis too much. I'm not ready to make a prediction yet, but it's a 6 or 7 for me. I'd be stunned if the Celtics blew through it, but they did here. It's just a different team on the other side, though. So I expect the Bucks to have more resolve. I expect Bud to coach a better series. All those role guys are amazing. Bobby Portis is going to be a problem. Allen is hitting everything he takes from 3. Connaughton got going in that game 5 last night. So they have a lot to work with there. And it's going to challenge the Celtics step too. Grant Williams was awesome in this series. Can he be as good against all that size? We'll see. Derek White, he was kind of I don't want to say non-factor in that series, but he's going to be better in this one coming up. So I don't expect it to be easy. If it was 5, I'd be stunned, but we'll get to that preview. Do you want to tell everybody real quick before we get back to the Nets, close it out here? We are brought to you on the Garden Report and Dome Theory by HelloFresh. Just got my kit last night, made tacos. Amazing taste, quality. All just laid out in a box. comes to you easy with instructions. It was an awesome experience, and 16 free meals. I got six myself. You're going to be eating for a while, 16 free meals. So go to HelloFresh.com/banners16, or actually it's playoff 16 now, code change. So ignore this banner. It's HelloFresh.com/playoffs16. Use the code playoff16 to get 16 free meals, 3 free gifts. It's worth it. Got the spaghetti, tacos, meatloaf, all good stuff over there. And this series was good stuff as well. A lot of fun. But where do the Nets go from here? That's what we'll close out with, because this could be the end for them, or it could be the beginning of something new. And it really does come down to Ben Simmons, doesn't it? And the way it ended there was not pretty. Like, laying out the game four return seemed like just so obvious that he was going to do it. He said it himself that it'd be fair to say that he was going to be out there for game four. And then it was still so unsurprising that after losing game three the way they did that night, that extra back soreness, he's out, he's not playing. And then it, the windfall into him not appearing on the bench, the emergency meeting with Clutch, and I think everybody in Nets land questioning, like, oh, is this over before it even started? Like, is the trade demand too coming here over how they handled this? Like, it was just so shocking. And even seeing him in Boston, like, no real ramp up, no urgency in these pregame situations. And maybe you read too much into them because it's all you get visually of him, the practices and everything else. But you just never saw him, like, going hard, firing up shots, dunking, like, showing this real urgency that he was going to be back soon. Maybe it's fair. Like, I don't think the playoffs were the right time to re-enter him into this lineup, but it seemed like that was the plan, and it didn't go that way. So where are we on Ben in Nets land?
Oh, boy. Well, it was a PR nightmare. I think that's probably a good way to good place to start. Just the, you know, I think the Nets did things wrong as well, and, like, granted, maybe they were being fed information that this guy was going to play, but you know, they had, there was a lot of, like, promotional videos that came out on the official Twitter. It was really like building up a return. And then for him to not even be on the bench was just like, it was just one more thing that the Nets had to deal with. Is he on the team next year? I don't know. I have no feeling if he's going to be on the team next year. Where do you go now with him? What does he look like, I guess, as a trade piece? I mean, this is two teams now that he's, you know, for lack of a better term, failed to report to and failed to play for. So, you know, whether it is the back issue, whether he's dealing with that, whatever he's dealing with, that's kind of what it looks like if you're looking at this from the perspective of another team that's trying to figure out, hey, what are we getting into here with him? So I don't know if he's on the team next year. I think he makes a lot of sense for them. They're a team that
he does. It's crazy.
They need wing depth. Like, you can't have Seth Curry and Patty Mills out there with Goran Dragic and Kyrie Irving and be like, all right, get some stops, guys. Like, it's just, I don't know if you can, you just can't play like that. So whether he's back or not, they need to fortify that spot. A lot easier said than done. You know, 3-and-D wings are the most sought after player type in the entire league. Every team is looking for them. So for the Nets to be in need of that at this juncture where it's like, they're pretty much title or bust next year. I think that's fair to say that next year's got to be the year where they need to do it. You know, they'll get a few other chances, but this is, KD will be what, 34 next year. So I believe I'm correct about that. So that's, you want to have this ready to go, and they're in need of the most sought after player type in the entire league. They'll need to fortify the front court because you have Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, Andre Drummond coming off the books. So hopefully you can find guys that you're, I guess, fit your scheme a little bit better. That also depends on whether Ben Simmons is on the team or not. But yeah, I mean, they just have a lot of big decisions. And beyond that, it's kind of like the Lakers situation last year where they are going to have to start somewhat fresh in a way and really, really hit a home run on guys that are going to be on minimum contracts or maybe the MLE.
They're in a better spot than the Lakers, which isn't a high bar, but they need Simmons. They do.
Well, they don't have Westbrook, so.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, you can look at Ben as a Westbrook if he's not going to show up. But if he does show up, I love this trade for Brooklyn when it happened. Like, Ben, this was the spot for him. Low scrutiny. You saw that Philadelphia game where they just killed the Sixers. I thought that was the perfect example of how Kyrie and Kevin were just going to eat all the attention and all the scrutiny that was coming Ben's way. They go out there and blow out the Sixers and that whole thing effectively there. But then Ben just never followed behind them. All he really had to do in the spot was pass, run in transition, and defend. And it seemed like that was his sweet spot. That's what he always wanted to do in Philly. But they needed more from him there. The Nets didn't. And he could just be himself, and it would have worked out great. And I just, listen, I believe that he was hurt at the beginning. He obviously got the injection and everything else, and it became pretty clear that that wasn't just a cover-up for whatever else was going on. But by the end, how much was just hesitation but on his part of jumping into a playoff series? I think it's fair to wonder there. And this is where I get caught up on him, because you can look at what he was before the disastrous playoff series last year and say this would be ideal for the Nets. But we don't know. It's been so long. So much has happened to him, and he hasn't been out there playing NBA basketball in so long that it's like, can he ramp up to that level again? The mental hurdles, you just don't know how those factor. You don't even know how to discuss them and how they could factor. It's like an injury, like a guy like tore his knee or something. Does he ever come back the same? Mm-hmm. When you go through mental hurdles like Simmons has, do you ever come back the same? Just in terms of being a great defender, the intensity you need to play with, and just sort of going through what it's like to play NBA basketball for a full season. And it is hard. Like, I think that's become so much more clear to us in recent years, like the mental strain of playing through a year, going through scrutiny, having bad games, having a disastrous playoff series. I mean, that seemed to be the trigger point for a lot of the stuff that he's going through here. And you just don't know. Like, there's so much uncertainty, but you just look at who he was and it fits perfectly in what the Nets are trying to do here. You just don't know. And that's why I always held out on him, especially when it was like, could he go to the Celtics? I wasn't for it, even with some of the upshots that he could bring, because of the fact that you just don't know with him. And you won't know until next opening day. And I feel like we're going to be going through the same thing again. Is he ready? Is he going to be ramped up on time? Is he going to be prepared to go? And that is just such a brutal thing that the Nets have to deal with now. The contract's ginormous. You can't move that. It was hard enough for Philly while getting something back. And it seems like this was the perfect clear up for both teams. I mean, the Nets get two firsts. They get Curry, who should have been a bigger factor than he was, I felt like, there. Drummond should have helped more than he did, and he did at first, I felt like. But in the end, it felt like both teams kind of lost this trade.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. I mean, it'll kind of – how these two teams move going forward, I guess, will decide the trade. You know, what the Nets do with Seth Curry.
I will say this. You'd rather have the hope of Simmons than what Harden is at this point, I feel like. Especially going into a contract that Harden was going to be going into.
I'm going to push back on that slightly. I want to see what he looks like 2 years removed from a hamstring strain, which I know sounds ridiculous, but like Chris Paul, what it was like, he had that year after he had the hamstring. And then the very next year, I think it was in OKC. That was when you started to see, you know, some life from him. Granted, he plays a very different game from James Harden. James Harden, I mean, there's a lot on the table for him mid-range if he learns how to post up. You know, catch and shoots, if he actually starts taking those are things that are on the table. That's going to take work for him. He's got to like really take the off season seriously. And I would hope that would be what he does this year, now that he's like fully healthy. So yeah, I think it'll be fun to watch in the future. Those picks, you know, we'll see what they're worth. They'll probably roll over the pick this year, the Sixers pick, to next year.
Oh, you can move them.
You could. And maybe that's something you do with Simmons. I'm not sure, but yeah, it'll really depend on, A, can Simmons get out there and, you know, has all of this time off? Because the one thing with the Simmons thing is I feel like the more time he spends away from the floor, it just increases the spotlight and the pressure. And, you know, I think that's...
He could have put it to rest so fast.
Yeah, and I...
Really could have.
You know, you go and play against in, like, a game four that didn't really matter in a way. Like, yeah, it did, but, like, the Nets were dead in the water. And I think the team had quit internally. So throwing him out there in that game four, I actually kind of understood it, because it's like he plays 15 minutes. If he doesn't look great, whatever, the story is going to be the Nets got swept and people are going to be, you know, as we've seen, clowning on Kyrie and KD. Like, it's, that was going to be the story. I just, you know, I was never in belief of like that performance in that game is really going to matter that much for him. So I don't know. We'll see, you know, if we do make it through this offseason, he's a Net. Getting him to play in some, you know, low stakes preseason games will help. And you know, we'll see if we can go from there. But yeah, it's a shame. It's really a shame. And it's a shame he had the back thing flare up at the very end of the season. They played a bunch of like the Pacers and the Cavs who at that point were pretty, they were dwindling. I think it's probably a good way to put it. Those would have been nice games to get him going.
For sure. And yeah, all the jokes and everything else. It's unfortunate. Like, this was the spot for him to get right, I felt like.
Yeah,
could have gone to a bad team and he would have been irrelevant forever, probably. Here, it's the sweet spot of not needing to do too much and being on a team that could theoretically win a ton of games here. So we have that. I guess real quick, remaining questions I got. Bruce Brown, Claxton, all these free agents here. I guess Curry's kind of in that group too with Harris coming back. How do you see all that going?
Think Joe will be cornerstone piece. Not sure about Seth. Feel like he's one of their best trade chips, if not their best trade chip. I guess Ben Simmons is probably, I don't know. I don't know what Ben Simmons is right now in terms of.
I love Bruce Brown. I really do. He's probably my favorite player on that team.
He's awesome. He had a great year. And I think you need to retain him. You need to buy, you know, I mean, the 3-point shooting, we'll see if it's, I don't know if he's going to be a above 40% guy, but I think you have to retain him. He was such a huge outlet for the Nets, you know, especially playing alongside Kyrie and his KD, especially is those two just had excellent chemistry together. So I think you need to keep him. He's also your best perimeter defender. Claxton, I don't know. I'm very mixed on what happens with Claxton. I would ultimately lean towards retaining him, but I have to say, like, the free throw shooting is really concerning.
I like Sharp.
I'm okay. Sharp's all right. I'm a little, I think
he was a good pair for Harden. Too bad that didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm indifferent on Sharp. I think Sharp is a good innings eater. I have questions about what he looks like defensively and like how's the best way to use him. He's just not like a hugely vertical athlete, and he's not particularly adept of foot. So it's like, I don't know what scheme you're using him in defensively. And that's always kind of how I look at bigs. Whereas Claxton, it's like, it's very clear what he's going to do. He's going to switch. It would be nice if they could get him a little more comfortable in drop coverage. That's maybe something they, you know, experiment with I guess more next year. But yeah, I would lean towards bringing back Claxton, but I don't have a good sense if he's going to be back. Bruce, I think, will be back for sure.
Yeah, they can pay him. They can eat that tax. I don't know. He's unrestricted, though, because he took the qualifying offer, right? So if he just wants to bomb out of there because he's sick of these fools, maybe it's something he does. But I don't know. There's not a lot of cap space out there either. I think
they have his bird rights.
Yeah, that's true. So they can pay him more than most can.
Yes.
Going to be interesting. They're probably the most interesting team of the offseason with all the things we talked about here. Appreciate Matt Brooks stopping by, giving us some insight. Go check him out at Nets Daily and basketballnews.com, as well as his podcast. What's the name of your podcast?
The Clear Out.
The Clear Out at Matt Brooks, NBA, MATTBROOKS, NBA. Appreciate him being here on Dome Theory, and hopefully we'll talk to you again next season.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it.